Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, for healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. As always, Saturdays, 10 o'clock on KBRT. We dive into the deeper meanings of health, the words you're all somewhat familiar with, whether you're new to holistic medicine or whether you're a veteran. Words on the tip of your tongue, words you've heard, words you've used, but do you really understand? Today's show is a pip. My favorite kind of show. We're going to talk about, in a sense, this is part two of a series I started on cancer and the immune system. But today, I want to focus on metastasis. And if you don't know what metastasis is, this is simply when someone has a tumor and a bit of that tumor, a cell or a clump of cells break off, and they've got ingenious ways to travel into the bloodstream via the lymph to the blood or right straight into the capillary and then into larger vessels, and then they go plant themselves through very sneaky little techniques that sometimes our immune system can deter and sometimes the cancer tricks the immune system. And that's what the cutting edge of science today is investigating, this incredibly fascinating interplay between the immune system and the cancer. But what there's much information on doesn't have to do with the immune system. It has to do with other factors. Things that, well, I'm sure you're not generally privy to. Other things that your body does to fight the cancer cell. Remember the old National Geographic, those fantastic National Geographic science documentaries that they did? Remember the one that they used to do on how to get pregnant, the sperm would have to travel up the vaginal canal and go through all these obstacles and things that could eat it and kill it, and that it could only live 5 to 7 days. And even if it did, its chances were very minimal, and maybe 1 out of 400 million sperm was going to fertilize an egg and thus a pregnancy. Remember that amazing documentary from National Geographic years ago? Guess what? That's about the chance that a cancer cell has of successfully metastasizing. Now, that's fascinating to me. We have this notion that if you have cancer, you have a tumor, even if you get that tumor cut out, which you definitely should, and I'll get into that today. I don't do a rah-rah for holistic medicine here with cancer. I don't think holistic medicine has great results with it. I've never been one to say, don't see your oncologist, don't consider all your options, never. I almost always tell people to have surgery. And there's very good reason for that, and you'll see that today. However, these coordinated processes through which you use conventional oncology, which is becoming increasingly moved away from chemo and radiation, and I'll get to that today. But this process where you actually do a smart integration of both, I think is a wonderful consideration. And, of course, we've got to have some union here between the essentials of modern standard oncology and what we call holistic or natural or alternative therapies. We need to have an intelligent integration of the two. And that's the perspective that I bring to you today. But, of course, there's a lot of little caveats. There's a lot of little zigs rather than the zags. And if you don't zig and zag right, it's bad. It's really bad. Cancer's on the rise. For as much as we're all touting these great advances we're making, and we are making advances, it's still real bad. And as any good oncologist will tell you, the best way to kill cancer, or the best way to deal with cancer, is don't get it. I had a surgeon say that the other day. He was going to cut somebody's body part out, and the individual was talking about alternatives and this and that, and the oncologist, the surgeon, just said, the best protection is don't get it. Yes, the best protection still today is don't get it. But you see, human nature is not consistent with that. We don't go out and weed the grass or mow the lawn or fix the car until we're almost in dangerous straits. And it's the same thing with our health. We don't take care of it. It's just human nature, and the deck is kind of stacked against us. I don't want to get into all the things that we do each day that 200-300 years ago we didn't do. One thing remember about cancer, we weren't getting it 300-400 years ago. So don't let anybody tell you, well, it's all about your genetics. Our genetics is no different today than it was 400 years ago, and we weren't getting it 400 years ago. Don't let anybody tell you, oh, yes, we were. Those farm boys out in the middle of Kentucky back in the 1600s when we were colonizing America, well, they were getting it. We just didn't know how to identify it. That is a lot of bunk. It didn't take a lot many years ago to take a corpse, dissect it out, and see these ugly growths in it. We understood tumors going back thousands of years ago. Do not let anybody tell you, well, listen, the reason you get it today but not then is, well, we got it then too, but we didn't really know how to identify it. That is not true. What is true is 400, 500, 600 years ago in the cities, in the suburbs, cities 400 years ago, every city, every apartment building had a bunch of cows built inside the apartment. I mean, the bottom line is it's not the genetics, it's the environment. So there's lots more of it now. What do you need to understand about it? Number one, well, I put a great article on the site today. So if you're new to the show, get to the website if you can. That's straighttalk.cc, not .com.cc. That's with two T's. If you're driving, if you can't get to the computer, get to it later. I put articles on the show. I put complicated articles on the show that you may have to read a few times. Do it. I put pictures on the show to make what's in the articles easier to understand, and then I refer to those pictures. Do that when you can. In the meantime, I'll describe it to you so you can still benefit much. But I did put an article called Metastasis, and it's a great article. We'll get into it later. But the title is, this is the all-important title, it's The Initial Hours of Metastasis. The importance of host tumor cell interactions as the cancer cells disseminate through the blood. Really, it's that initial title, The Initial Hours of Metastasis. One thing this article is going to tell you, and they're sure of this, and this should have impact on you, is that once you have a tumor, so you're told you have a tumor in the prostate. You're told you have a lung tumor. You're told you have a tumor in the kidney. You're told you have a tumor in the liver. You're told you have a tumor in the breast. You're told you have a tumor in the colon. Get it attenuated, meaning get it cut, get it taken out, get whatever you need to have that thing excised or killed. Because people don't die of tumors. Well, there's exceptions. In fact, everything I'm going to say to you today has exceptions, but we're talking in the general, in the high percentage. People do not die of tumors. When you find out you have cancer, meaning a breast tumor, a lung tumor, a liver tumor, a tumor in the colon, a tumor in the prostate, that is not what you die of. You die of the metastasis. And the number one thing you have to do to stop metastasis is take out the tumor. Because if you don't, and you allow that tumor to grow, it will send dozens, hundreds, thousands, millions of cells each day into the blood, which greatly increases the probability of metastasis. Now, I may be a holistic practitioner, and I may have lots of solutions for you in terms of how to best bolster your body so that your body's natural mechanisms can work against metastasis. And I don't think anybody in oncology or anywhere would argue with that. However, I would certainly never tell anybody to just keep their tumor, because that tumor is going to seed the metastasis. Once you get that tumor out, you have taken a massive burden off your immune system. You have robbed cancer of the opportunity to drop hundreds, thousands, millions of cancerous cells into the bloodstream, all looking for sites to plant their seed and grow into other tumors. In other words, you're tempting full-blown metastasis. Don't do that. So rule number one, and again, rule number one is really prevent it, but we're not getting into that today. Today we're getting into, you've got it. Somebody told you you have a breast tumor. It's a malignant tumor. Cut it out as fast as you can. And understand, tumors are all different. There is no such thing as one cancer. Well, fundamentally there is. I have to watch myself. Fundamentally, there is. But all cancers have different personalities, different cell types. That's why they'll say a pancreatic tumor is lethal. It's dangerous. But a tumor in the prostate, well, the truth is, today, tumors in the prostate, lots of oncologists leave it alone. They don't even want to bother with it. By the time it's outside the capsule, you'll be 120 years old. Well, they're both cancers, so you've got to get that one straight. Cancers have very, very different personalities. And when you're talking about cancer, it's what stage of cancer? Where is it along its pathway? Because how you're going to go after it, what you're going to do, is very, very different. How you're going to integrate conventional oncology into it is very, very different, based on where it is in its development. So again, today's show is not about how to prevent it. Today's show assumes you got it. Rule one, if we start there, is cut it out. Lots of people argue with that. I've counseled many people in this respect. I never tell them to hang on to a tumor. I know people that don't even want to go and have it biopsied. Lumps growing all around the body. Lumps in the prostate, lumps in the breast. Don't want to look at it. Don't believe in it. That's not smart. Oh, but if I biopsy it, I'm going to spread it. It's cost benefit. Even if that is true, it's cost benefit. If you've got something suspicious, you want to know. Because the earlier you get it, greatly increases your chances for survival. And again, I'm going to say something else. So, you know, part of the show today, guys, is going to be about these little one-liners I give you, because there's so many little caveats in the cancer journey. And each little line is gold. I'll give you one that's gold. Here's another one that's gold. Mr. Murphy, we've cut out 8 inches of your large intestine, and we've taken out the few lymph that it looked like the cancer may have spread to, and you are in remission. Shake hands, go back and live your life. Never, ever, ever buy that one. What Mr. Murphy's supposed to do is say, Mr. Oncologist, with my type of cancer and therapy, if I comply, what percentage of people with my type of cancer are going to be alive in 5 years, and what percentage are going to be dead, despite compliance with oncological therapy. You have to bring to your oncologist, once you have a tumor taken out, or once you've had the tumor taken out and you've done chemo and or radiation, you need to get straight with the doctor. Never have an oncologist shake your hand and say, you're cancer free, go back and live your life. Never, ever, ever do that. Now, that's a tough thing to do. And to some of you, yeah, sure, that's common sense. I would never do that. Yes, you would. How many people I have known over the last 20 years, brave people, tough people, people that know how to stand up to it. The minute they get the diagnosis, their legs shake, and they don't stop shaking till they go to their grave. I have seen this so many times. So although you may say, well, telling or asking your oncologist what your 5-year survival rate is, that's just common sense. Go watch people with cancer. Almost invariably, it's what they forget to ask. These interactions between you and your oncologists are fascinating to me. Whether it's the oncological surgeon or it's the oncologist who's supposed to sort of like orchestrate the entire journey, regardless of who it is, when I watch patients interact with their doctors, often it's like they become dumb. It's the blind leading the blind. The doctor's got some pat little sermon that's about 10 minutes that he's rehearsed. And the patient just sits there and nods and nods and nods. And as the doctor talks, the patient gets more depressed. You know, I'm not criticizing. This is a heavy thing. But you're going to be making decisions. And if you make the right decisions, I can tell you, you can greatly maximize your chances of living cancer-free. When they tell you this cancer's got a 5-year survival rate and 60% of you with this breast cancer or colon cancer, whatever you want to talk about, say 60% are going to be alive in 5 years, you know why they use 5 years? Because generally, and again, this is not 100% true, but generally, if you've had cancer and you're alive after 5 years, it's not coming back. Now, that is not 100% true. But according to oncology, and their statistics are sound, no matter what you've got cancer-wise, if it doesn't come back for 5 years, statistically, it's very much in your favor. You're never going to see it again. Now, there are many, many, many potentially lethal cancers. Breast cancer that's invaded the lymph. Colon cancer that's invaded the lymph. Again, note, the minute it gets out of the organ. But again, here's a caveat. So you got to hang with me on today's show, because I've got to stop myself and make these little statements or you're not going to get the data. Here's another one. So my last point was, make sure you get the 5-year survival rate. Make sure you understand what that is. Don't have somebody tell you, we took your colon out, a few lymph nodes, you're cancer-free. Just do the chemo routine and you'll be fine. You're in remission. Congratulations. Do not let them tell you that. One. Two. The next piece. It didn't get into the lymph. You want to know something? No one knows if it got into the lymph. Now, I hate to tell you that. What do we know? We know that if the cancer cell, if the tumor has a cell that breaks off and gets into the lymph, it may get into a lymph node and it may find a colony there. And if that colony begins to grow, or there's just enough cancer cells in that lymph node, it doesn't mean you have cancer of the lymph. It just means the cancer broke off from the tumor and got into the lymph. After the lymph, it's going to get into the blood. Maybe, maybe not. That's the point of the show. We're getting there. We're getting to the punchline. But once it's in the lymph, unless it's there in multitude. Unless there are many, 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 many cells in that lymph, nobody's going to find it. They talk about the sentinel lymph nodes. That means once the cancer cell breaks off the tumor and it gets to the lymph, which node does it have to get to if it's going to spread? That's the sentinel node. And they'll take out the sentinel node and examine it. Guess what? Unless there's lots of cells there, they're going to miss it. Now, they'll tell you, from what we know, the cancer was maintained in the tumor. We got it early enough. We microscopically dissected the lymph nodes. It's not in your lymph. You're fine. That is not always true. They will tell you that is not always true. It's only till invasion into the lymph nodes is significant that they're going to find it. If it's obvious, just about any pathologist is going to find it. If it's not obvious, if there aren't enough cancer cells, they're not going to get it. Or, suppose the cell got into the lymph and it didn't hang out there. Suppose the cell got into the lymph. Suppose a million cells got into the lymph and just kept going. Suppose it got into the blood already. How are they going to find it then? Lots of cancer, and this is now another caveat. Lots of cancer moves from the tumor to the blood. It doesn't go from the tumor to the lymph. Now think about this. I'm going to stop the clock for all of you, and I want you to listen to me. And I want you to understand something. When your oncologist tells you we cut the tumor and we don't see it in the lymph, well, I just talked about that. When he says we cut out the tumor, which you should do, I just talked about that. When he says we cut out the tumor, it's not in the lymph, that's a really good sign. You have to understand there are many cases where the cancer cell, the CTC, the circulating tumor cell, whether it's a single cell or a clump, there are many cases where it goes into the blood, skips the lymph. It's going to get to the blood to disseminate throughout the body. If you've got cancer in the colon, for it to get to the lung or the brain or the liver, it's got to travel through the blood. It's not that it travels through the lymph. The lymph ends up in the venous blood. And that's the point. No one knows when you've had a tumor if a cell or many cells have broken off and gone straight to the blood. And if they've gone straight to the blood, no one's going to know. So then how can doctors say, we took the tumor, from what we can see on gross examination, it's not in the lymph. It's not in the lymph on microscopic, and therefore it didn't spread. No, you cannot say that. Okay? Well, it's important they tell you what they know. It's important they tell you all the good news. But you have to be fully informed. And if you talk to them, you'll find out that when you've got a 5-year survival rate of something like 60-40, 70-30, 80-20, 20-80, if you even ask that, you have to understand that many of the failures or many of the people who are not alive after 5 years are not alive not because the cancer didn't spread. The cancer didn't spread. You will be alive. Many people get fooled because we don't have the technology. How could we? To figure out if the cancer, say, went straight to the blood or if it's in a very microscopic amount in the lymph, or the lymph node that they looked at, that cancer cell or bunch have already cleared that lymph node. Cancer's not stupid. It may not want to hang out in a lymph node. Here's a little caveat. How come cancer of the spleen is rare? Do you know that? The spleen. Do you know what the spleen is? The spleen is an organ on the left upper quadrant. It's in part an immune system organ. The spleen is like a big tree. And on the branches are macrophages and dendritic cells and NK cells, natural killer cells, and B cells, lymphocytes, B lymphocytes, and I think T lymphocytes also. That's what the spleen is. Now think about it. If the spleen is an immune system organ, why would cancer be very rare in the spleen? Tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. Yeah. If you're a cancer cell, what and why? That's like a thief that would want to rob a police precinct. Why would cancer want to go straight into the heart of an immune system's? If you have an immune system center, why would a smart cancer cell, and cancer cells are smart, why would it want to go straight to the spleen? It's like a thief wanting to steal and deciding he was going to go rip off a police precinct. Not successful, not intelligent. Hint. The immune system and the number of immune system cells available in any given moment and the viability of those immune system cells, which is its own study. Check last week's show. We started to get on the topic. I'm going to try to do a bunch of topics. I don't know how I'm going to lay them out, but I find this stuff fascinating. I'm sorry if you have cancer. I truly am. My mother died of it. Everyone's life has been touched by cancer. If there is a devil out there, I shouldn't say that. You know, we have to kill cancer. You know, it's your tendency. You want to say, I want to kill cancer. If you've ever watched anybody waste to it, your humanness makes you want to kill cancer. And I'm right there with you. But the truth is, in a calmer, more reflective moment, we have to exalt it. You got to go Zen on it. You got to go judo jujitsu on cancer. It's not about killing it. It's about putting it to sleep. It's about disarming it. It's about neutralizing it. And you got to have the discipline, the maturation. You got to have the depth to see it that way, even though, quite honestly, that may not be so easy to do. But that's a much better way to look at it. I think it's fascinating. I want you to think it's fascinating. Because the bottom line is when you get sick, you're on a journey. And you have to find fascination with that journey. You have to implore God's grace in that journey. And your healing is about that. Your healing really is about embracing a journey. Right? I know it sounds poetic and this isn't science and oncology would never look at it that way. But you see, the future of oncology will. And we all know the amount of literature that backs up my statements. So I like to pepper my advice to you. But I like the hard stuff. This article's the hard stuff. Get on this article. Click the article, The Initial Hours of Metastasis. I'll give you a minute to do that, and I'll sing you a song in the meantime. All right. The Initial Hours of Metastasis. We're just going to go through a couple of pages here. I'm going to pull out the salient points and teach you how to think with them. Oh, yeah, think about this, too. Why does the heart never get cancer? What is it about the heart that makes cancer rare? You ever hear anybody that got heart cancer? What, the heart's just got something going on there? After this article, you'll know why no one gets cancer of the heart. Well, that's actually not true. There's no 100% anywhere, anything. But why is cancer of the heart so rare? Read this article with me, you'll understand. Abstract. Tumor cells transit from the primary tumor via blood circulation to form metastasis in distant organs. During this process, tumor cells encounter a number of environmental challenges and stimuli that profoundly affect their metastatic potential. That's a big statement. By the way, this is the Koch Institute, or the Koch Institute for Integrative Cancer Research, MIT, Howard Hughes Medical Institute, and the Koch Institute. These are not little articles. This isn't the local nutritionist who just has an opinion. This isn't sociology class where we discuss causes for crime. This is hard science. These are manuscripts. These are peer-reviewed articles. And if you publish in a peer-reviewed journal and you make your stuff up, your career is done. That's why we call them peer reviews. A peer-reviewed article, not the article in Discovery Magazine, not the article in Scientific American, not the article in Vanity Fair, but a peer-reviewed article means you spend 4 years in college, 4 to 6 years on your PhD, you get a crummy little job that hopefully you're in love with, you make a little money, you still drive a little dinky car, then you're in your 40s, you're doing better, you're starting to get your payoffs, you have a little growing family, and if you put an article in a peer-reviewed journal that's a lot of garbage bunko, that's the end of your career. Pardon the divergence, but you have to understand why I put these articles on here. Because once you publish like this, you can't be wrong. Well, you can, but peer-reviewed means something. A number of environmental challenges that profoundly impact their metastatic potential. Here we review the cooperative and dynamic host-tumor-cell interactions that support and promote the hematogenous dissemination of cancer cells to sites of distant metastasis. Hematogenous dissemination, that means through the blood. Again, the cells break off, one or multiple, get to the lymph, or they go straight to the blood. If they go to the lymph, they'll get to the blood. Both ways, they're going to be severely challenged. Okay. Now, introduction. Metastasis is the cause of about 90% of cancer-associated deaths. Yet the mechanisms governing this remain poorly understood. This is 2012. That's 5 years ago. How much do you think we figured out in 5 years? Well, the truth is a lot, but still it's poorly understood. It really is. We still don't know what the mechanism of metastasis is. So here we are stating that we don't really understand this clinically important process. Tumors can metastasize via the lymphs to lymph nodes. And then distant metastasis rely on hematogenous dissemination via the blood. That's a repeat of what I said. Now, this is what I underlined. Detachment from the primary tumor, intravasation into the vascular system. Intravasation means from the tumor, they eat their way, these cancer cells. They push themselves into the capillaries. Intravasation, it's a word you want to know. It means a chunk breaks off from the tumor or a cell breaks off from the tumor, and it squeezes its way through the wall of the capillary. That's intravasation. So it intravasates, and it gets in to the blood circulation. It gets into what? The big artery? No. It squeezes its way through the capillary wall. That's intravasation. Now, once it's in the capillary wall, this is what you need to know. We're going to get there. Now, look at this little fact here. Despite the fact that large primary tumors can shed millions of cells into the vasculature every day, very few metastases eventually develop. Look at that statement. Look at that statement. If that's not manna from heaven, I don't know what is. There, a peer-reviewed conservative journal talking about the prospect that if you have a fairly large tumor, and we don't know what that means, but little is big, believe me. If you've got a small tumor in layman's terms, It's telling you here that even though they know in mouse models, cat models, animal models, that that tumor will be seeding gazillions of cells into the bloodstream every day, very few develop. Doesn't that turn you on? Wouldn't you like then to say, wow, what's the study through which I can get myself into that category and then increase my probability in terms of seriously limiting metastasis? That's the way we ought to think. But we don't think that way. So, caveat, this is where science has a problem. Science has a problem because it watches a natural mechanism. It reports in peer-reviewed journals on the occurrences of natural mechanisms. And then instead of saying, okay, person to person to person, mouse to mouse to mouse, rat to rat to rat, cat to cat to cat, what determines the organism that doesn't ever get sick then, that beats metastasis? What determines, what are the set of variables that make sure that metastasis doesn't occur for 5 years and then becomes a moot point? And what organisms create an environment that promotes metastasis within a year or two? What factors determine the variability? That's what's not studied. We study the mechanism so we can create a drug to interfere with the mechanism. That's what we do. Do you know what that's like? That's like watching two people headed towards a divorce and then scanning in with your camera crew the morning the husband and the wife are having a fight over the wife's poor breakfast. And the husband picks up the kitchen table and he throws it through the wall and they divorce. And your camera crew catches that. And then an article goes out and says, we've discovered a way to make sure couples don't divorce. We are now cementing the kitchen table down to the floor. And we can assure you then, because our camera crew went in there and actually saw divorce be preceded by a kitchen table that went flying through a window. You laugh, right? You laugh. That's what we actually do. We study the entire mechanism, focus in on the part that we can affect, and then do it that myopically. That's what we do. That is exactly where we fail. We fail there. We're not thinking. Science should study nature, comprehend it, and then what science should do is try to advance it. Now, caveat. You know, you gotta, this is a zig and a zag, this show. Gotta be this way, guys. There's too many little clinical pearls here. Comprehend nature and then copy it. We're doing that. It's called immunotherapy. Chemotherapy is dead. Chemo and radiation, yeah, they're still going to be recommended. They're still going to be used. But they are being consistently overpowered. Nobody is hoppy and nobody's high on chemo anymore. No one in oncology is really going to make any money on chemo anymore. It's not the shtick. It didn't work. It did what it was supposed to do. And again, I'm not saying do it or don't do it. But my point to you is it is being overpowered by a better philosophic approach, and that is stimulate immunity, called immunotherapy. If anybody in the audience today has cancer, if any of you are facing the types of difficult decisions I'm describing today, do yourself a favor. Bring immunotherapy to your oncologist. Caveat, big show with detours today. Don't take the advice of one oncologist. Caveat. Don't say, well, gee, I'm going to go for a second opinion and get down the street to the hospital that's half a mile away. Don't go to St. John's and say, hey, I'm a smart consumer. I'm going to get a second opinion and then go to St. John's. These guys all know each other. Don't do it locally. Don't hip-hop from St. John's to UCLA to UCSD. to St. Joe's in Burbank, to USC, so on. And so, do not do that. You know what you do? You go locally, and then you go to another city. You go to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. You go to Sloan Kettering in New York. You scan the internet for innovative approaches with innovative scientists connected to good hospitals. And you start to explore like that. Don't go locally. And do not start experimentally. Don't skip therapies that work for therapies that are experimental, that are just touted and exaggerated because that's where the money is. Don't do that. Yeah. Cancer's a journey. Health is a journey. You've got to have information. You've got to have knowledge. That's why you listen to this show. Can't get it to you in one show. I'm going to probably do a series of shows. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. Get to the phone Monday or whenever you do. Make the call. Come in. Make an appointment. Talk to my staff. They'll tell you what's involved, costs, time, effort, and I will put you on the right track. I'm not a holistic practitioner. I am a person that can understand where you're at in your body, and I can use and recommend all sorts of options so that you can utilize your body's own natural mechanisms. And I support allopathic medicine. You need your medical doctor. You need a team of medical doctors. They're not so greedy, and they're not so selfish. They have a piece of it. Why we can't start to understand that there are many pieces of it is beyond me, and I won't get into that. But anybody that wants to get real insight, 714-850-1007. That aside, if this is the first time you're listening to the show, I have 305 shows on the website. I have people each week. I have dozens of doctors who listen and study these shows. And those numbers are increasing. Because anybody in health, healing, medicine knows you got to cut to the point. And while there's so much literature out there, how do you extract the essentials? And that's what I'm good at, extracting essences to give you something to think about. So think about this. Think about millions of cells into the vasculature every day, and very few metastasize. What does that mean? It means, now just scroll down to the next page, transit through the bloodstream. During this short period of stress, so where I was just reading, which was page one, go to page two, scroll down on that article, transit through the bloodstream, first minutes, here it is. During this short period of transit, cells that remain exposed to the blood flow are vulnerable to death induced by sheer stress and turbulence. That's it. End of show. You just got gold. Sheer stress and turbulence. What does that mean? It means enhanced blood flow. It means lowered blood viscosity. It means minimizing blood stasis. Are all on your side. It means the death, that the vast percentage of these metastatic cells in the initial phase, the death they're going to experience is heavily determined by sheer stress. Sheer stress. That means if that blood is flowing, that means if you're bending every inch of your body into pretzel-like configurations called yoga, that means if you're bouncing or crawling. That means if you're in and out of hot, cold saunas. That means if people, manipulators of body parts, massage therapists, are manipulating the body to push through stasis in the body. It means you're enhancing the sheer stress of blood flow. You got to get that. This is a peer-reviewed article, not something to be scoffed at, telling you, point one, that the vast percentage of the millions of cells that might escape when they do escape, mind you, if you've cut it out, you don't even have that problem. But it tells you that these cells looking for a site start in the blood. Whether they're in the lymph, they go to the blood. So they always get to the blood. If the sheer stress force of the blood is high enough, it bursts and murders the cancer. That's why most of those cells don't get through to the first place. Now that's really big. Because if you get into blood dynamics, you understand that there is an equation here, and that is that sheer stress is inversely proportional to blood viscosity. In other words, the thicker the blood, the less sheer stress. In other words, if you take someone's head and you split it in two, you're shearing it with a sheer force. Scissors, when you cut, the blades of the scissors shear through the paper. Sheer force is measured in the blood, and it's directly proportional to blood flow. The more flow you've got, the more sheer stress you've got, which means blood viscosity is a major factor in whether or not those cancer cells get a chance to rest and hide and elude and plant. Because once they're in the capillaries, they're going to, if they can set themselves up, if there's not enough sheer force, they can set themselves up, cling to the inside of the capillary wall, and push the endothelial cells apart, and then they get out of the capillary, and now they're going into the organ space, the extracellular matrix. So there's this interface, right? There's this interface between the inside of the capillary and the mass of the organ, the extracellular matrix of the organ, the ECM. And what a cancer cell will do is break off the tumor, wedge its way into the capillary, move through the blood, and then basically attach to the capillary wall and push open the cells of the capillary wall and then crawl into a distant organ. That's how it's done. However, if blood viscosity is low enough, if your blood moves, if you're pumping blood, if you're pumping oxygen, if you're working in ways that are contrary to the inflammatory process, if you're working in ways nutritionally that degrade the fibrin that the cancer cell uses to stick to the wall of the capillary, then you're minimizing risks. On top of the fact that if you do nothing, the articles tell you that the risks are minimal. I think we're going to have to go to some of the pictures. All right? Look at this. Picture 6. If you're on the website, if not, just listen along. Picture 6, I put a book on blood stasis. It's from Chinese medicine, blood stasis. Picture number 7. That's a medical office talking about a complete blood viscosity profile. Hematologists, no. Look at this. Picture number 9. This is a medical doctor, Dr. Leslie Simpson, blood viscosity factors, the missing dimension in modern medicine. This issue of blood viscosity is huge. Blood viscosity determines sheer stress. The thinner the blood, the more the blood flows. The more the blood flows, the more you increase the sheer stress. The increase in the sheer stress means you're going to crush the skull on any escaped cancer cell that's in the capillary. Take that to the bank. And how do you increase blood viscosity? How do you not increase blood viscosity? Every cleanse you do. Decreasing blood viscosity? Why me? Why would I do that? Why would you do that? Look at the articles on metastasis. We can no longer condescend towards the innate mechanisms of the body, which can be utilized, backed by the very peer-reviewed scientific journals on how cancer cells metastasize. You can't condescend towards notions that blood viscosity is critical in the mitigation of metastasis. Now, blood viscosity. Give me some of the things that determine blood viscosity. First of all, one way the blood becomes way more viscous is that some pro-inflammatory mediator, some pathogen, something else, and we'll get to that, compels the immune system to lay down fibrin, and the cancer cell uses selectin. It uses other fibrinous proteins, glycoproteins, to connect to the inside of the capillary to make it more difficult then for the macrophages and the neutrophils to attack. So number one, you need to minimize blood viscosity, which means you have to move your blood. Number two, much of what determines blood viscosity has to do with the amount of fibrin laid down by the immune system. When your insulin is high, your fibrin's high. When your blood sugar's high, your fibrin's high. When you do not move your body, when you are not flexible, your fibrin's high. When you are sympathetic dominant, when you are not balanced in the autonomics, you are sending messages from the hypothalamus via the autonomics to the tumor sites to tell them to grow. When you do not have parasympathetic balance, you are very tumor friendly. When your body has not really cleaned itself through the excretory organs, not only does the immune system have to deal with the cancer, the NK cells and the macrophages that will otherwise go after the tumor cell will go after your metals. They'll go after your microbes. They'll get clogged up in all the viscous mucin of the intercellular space. The saturated, stinky fats of the blood and all the other glycation end chain products that sludge up blood and intercellular fluid are more compounds that the immune system has to focus on instead of the cancer. You can overload the immune system. You can overload the immune system by creating stasis. You create stasis by not tending to all the things I just listed, insulin, say. And all of this then makes your blood like a swamp, and that decreases the shear stress. And so those cells, which if you do nothing, are largely handled anyway, but think of the possibilities if you would just put the pieces of the puzzle together. I rest my case. Now, ask yourself, why don't we have cancer in the heart? Why is that rare? And again, I'm going to have to do this in other parts, and I'm going to continue to really break down cancer, metastasis, angiogenesis. And what we're going to arrive at over the weeks is an understanding of how to bring therapy together. And this is what we have to do. There is an incredibly fascinating aspect to this that has to do with how cancer cells trick the immune system. There are these very fine balances between cancer cells sending out poisons that stop the immune system from working. The immune system gets reprogrammed by the cancer cells, and then the immune system shuts itself off. And there's just so many nuances about this. It's its own aspect, but one thing on the horizon, and you have to remember, I said this today. We're doing something now. We're going into your NK cells or your killer T cells. We're cloning them. We're injecting them back in. There's a therapy used at the cancer clinics and in conventional mainstream dendritic cell therapy, where we take the dendritic cell. It's another cell of our innate immunity that goes and whacks cancer cells. And what we're doing is we're cloning them and injecting them back in. This is good. There are many studies to show this is an improvement over your standard oncological therapies, radiation and chemo. With melanoma, it is extending lifespan, metastatic melanoma, extending lifespan very significantly. But not every hospital does it, and you have to travel, and you may not be a candidate, but you got to understand where it's going. Now, from our standpoint, in the natural woods of this, we want to talk about immunity on the lines of what intact mechanisms can you deploy to enhance your own immunity. Blood viscosity is one of them. Something I've said before, but I'm taking a different angle on it today. Okay, we're going to close here. Why is heart cancer rare? Because the heart is a hollow organ that's always moving the blood. Think about that. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Hope you enjoyed the show. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. If you have a health concern, if you're looking to get educated about innate mechanisms within you that we can enhance, magnify, exaggerate to help you cure you, give us a call. We'll see you next week.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.